If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Ketchup Podcast.
What's good, GK listeners? I'm Kyle Eckert.
And I'm Chris Heck.
You are listening to Chapter 19, and the topic of today is Fresh Takes. Two big-time video game releases dropped this week, the Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 combo remake, and the largely hyped but already controversial Crystal Dynamics and Square Enix Marvel's Avengers. Chris and I have already had a couple hours to sink into these games, so we'll hit you with our first impressions. We'll dive into the Avengers first, but before we get there, we wanted to take a moment and do our own version of Avengers Assemble to send out the call for you to help us spread the word about Geek Ketchup. We love finding new hobbies and interests from the world of geekery, and typically those hobbies come from our friends' suggestions, so help us grow our circle by sharing us with your friends. Find us on Instagram and Twitter, at Geek Ketchup Pod, and on Facebook and YouTube, Geek Ketchup Podcast. All the way back in January, we previewed what 2020 would look like for console gaming. Of course, we looked at the next generation of consoles, but we also looked at the top games we expected to do well. On that list was Marvel's Avengers, an action-adventure title developed by Crystal Dynamics and published by Square Enix, based on the infamous comic book superhero team. This game's story takes place years after the core Avengers of Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Hulk, Black Widow, and Hawkeye have been established, rise to ultimate notoriety, then suffer a colossal collapse. Kamala Khan takes center stage in an effort to reunite the team to combat the growing threat of the Advanced Idea Mechanics, or AIM, led by George Tarleton. While the story has been given appropriate detail, the real focus of the game is on the co-op matchmaking, giving players a chance to take control of their favorite Avenger and team up with others to go on an aimbot-crushing mission. Chris and I got some time with the August beta, as well as a pre-order early access, so we're far enough in that we have a solid feel for the game. And Chris, I'll come right out and say it, this game is hooking me.
For sure, yeah. It's kind of funny because you were all in on this game pretty much since announcement, whereas I was a little bit more on the fence about it as they were moving through development. We were getting little pieces of the story and trailers here and there. I was just a little concerned around gameplay, how deep it would be, if it'd be more of a single-player game versus a multiplayer game, you know, those kinds of things. So my take on it was that I was going to wait for, you know, some personal accounts on what people were thinking about it, maybe some of the critic reviews from IGN and some of the other trusted sources. But as you mentioned, that beta came around. You got to check out the private weekend. I jumped in on the open weekend, and it completely changed my mind.
Oh, yeah. And I remember sending that text after the first beta weekend, like, I think this is going to do it. I think this is going to get everybody in my group of friends hooked on this game. Because you're right, I was all in from the start. It was like, it was Marvel, it was this open world, like combat, even if it was minimal to do, I knew that I was going to like it because for the most part, I like all things Marvel Avengers.
Sure.
And I like things all comic books. So it just had me and I wanted to experience it one way or another. I knew that there was some controversy around stylistic choices and mechanic choices. There was a lot to be determined. This is the first time anyone's ever attempted something like this.
Right.
With the Marvel genre. Obviously, we've seen the Batman games are very similar.
Yeah.
But this co-op environment and a total open world, well, maybe not open world, but open action, I should say. And it was very lofty goals that were set. So it came with all the criticism that you're taking a really big bite here. Can you get it down? Can you chew it? Can you make it consumable and quality? And you're right, out the gate, the beta was really solid. The pre-order, the first 3-4 days that we've had with this game have all been spectacular.
Yeah, and kind of going along those lines, you know, Crystal Dynamics has been making great games for years with the Tomb Raider series and some other items, but something in this genre with a brand new IP, you know, it's a little bit more concerning, or really, I guess it's a little bit more risky as far as, are they going to hit the mark from the get-go?
Right.
Right? You know, if I'm going to go spend $60, $70, $80 on this game, is it going to be worth it? And I probably admittedly had a little bit of anxiety about it just after the Anthem debacle.
Oh, yeah.
Because this game in some ways was promoted to be that type of game, right? Like an Anthem or a Destiny, you know, that open multiplayer type game, loot and shoot type style. And we saw the epic failure was Anthem. And so it was like, you know, I guess there's some possibility that it could happen here. You know, then we jump into the beta, and it really, really was a good way to get over those concerns.
Yeah.
Because not only was the beta well put together from a technical operating standpoint, it played well, they also gave us a ton of content. So we really got to feel and see exactly what this game was going to have in it. I mean, we got to play with multiple characters. We got numerous missions, got to see the skill trees, see the gear. I mean, it was a great infomercial, essentially, for this game. And very shortly after we played it, I went and pre-ordered it so that way, you know, I could jump straight into it as soon as it was available.
Oh, yeah. When I had forgotten that the pre-order, I pre-ordered it so long ago, I actually forgot that when you pre-order, you get the 3-day early access. So when my PlayStation triggered over and was like, the countdown switched from 4 days to 1 day, I was like, oh, I get early access. I totally forgot about this. So, I mean, it sealed the deal on the pre-order on your end. But it's interesting that comparing it to Anthem, where the beta was like that one mission, that one boss, and it teased you, and you're like, okay, I think I'm going to get something really good here. You're totally right. The beta for Avengers, they gave you the full suite. They gave you multiple missions at different time spots in the story,
yep,
which gave you the ability to unlock a full, like, Black Widow, Iron Man, Hawk, and Kamala Khan completely, so they all three play slightly differently. It's interesting with the skill tree in the beta. We were pretty blown away. We're like, wow, okay, this is a solid-looking skill tree, only to get the full game and it to be even bigger,
yeah,
and have more areas to it. So that was a nice little touch as well. I think the beta was really solid all around. I don't think we ended up having any, maybe one technical difficulty with the beta. So that was a solid showing as well.
Yeah, I think it was when we started to party up, we had a little bit of an issue with some of the matchmaking or getting in. It wasn't very much. It was one of the stronger betas that I have seen, and it actually kind of paid off for him because I saw this week that it was recently reported to have been the most downloaded beta in PS4 lifecycle history.
Wow.
So, you know, really, if you look at kind of the whole 2020 year for PlayStation, they are ending the PS4 lifecycle on a huge bang because you had multiple games with The Last of Us and Ghost of Tsushima that broke records for number of copies sold, you know, pretty much like first week.
Yeah.
And now you've got this little factoid about this beta being the most successful in history from a download standpoint. So it really, you know, what really, really put me over the top here was the combat.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you jump in there, and because they gave us so much in the beta where you were actually getting to see the full suite of abilities and attacks that the different characters had, it just makes you feel like there's an incredible authenticity to the fighting styles, the characters, and all that. And I was like, man, like when you're playing as Iron Man, you're like, I am Iron Man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, the combat is super fun. And they seem to have nailed the characters that I've played so far. Like you said, Iron Man, you feel like Iron Man. Hawk, you feel like a giant bruiser and taking on tanks with no question, just pounding them. Kamala Khan with the stretchy limbs, her ability almost like Mr. Fantastic.
Yep.
And then Black Widow to cap it off on the beta test, like, I mean, she was smooth as all get out, a perfect mix between Batman and Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of with the whip and the abilities there and the Eskrisma sticks that Nightwing also uses. And then we got a small taste of Thor and Captain America, which has left me jonesing for more when we fully unlock them in the real game.
It's true. Yeah, Black Widow for me was the big surprise. Typically, character like that in a game like this, when you've got Iron Man or Thor out there in the roster, would be kind of a throwaway or easily overlooked. But I found myself in the beta almost immediately after the opening fight with Taskmaster being like, man, I really, really liked Black Widow.
Yeah.
How fast she moves, the grapple hook, the dodge, you know, it just really flowed extremely well. And she just looks really badass with the stun sticks as she's, you know, just laying down a beatdown on the enemies. But talking about the beta just kind of sets us up for what we've seen in the full game already this week. But I couldn't have been happier with that. It is really proven to be a solid purchase all around. So I didn't feel like I got suckered into this game the way the Anthem beta did. Like you mentioned, they gave us such a snippet and the combat was the best part about Anthem. So yeah. That's really all you got to do in the beta. So it felt good. And we were like, okay, we'll snag this game. But here, I felt like all that risk came down just because they did give us so much. You know, you pretty much knew exactly what was going to be in this game. And then we were just hopeful, right?
Yeah.
That all of it would be expanded. And that seems to have been the case. So let's jump into the actual game now that we've had 4 or 5 days with it. What have your thoughts been so far?
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And honestly, the best part so far, and I expected it to be this way, has been the story. It's really hooked me. I think Kamala Khan is a great main character choice. She's relatively unheard of to most casual comic book fans. She debuted back in 2013. And so they've brought her in as an Inhuman and fully developed this story about the A-Day occurrence that happened 5 years ago, where there was a giant explosion, all this destruction, the Avengers were blamed, then disbanded, and the Terrigen Mist spread throughout the world, creating the Inhuman threat, as we'll say. And AIM and George Tarleton, who eventually will become MODOK, I believe, given the comic book past of his character,
yeah.
He's going to develop into MODOK. So they've used a lot of these various areas of the Marvel universe and tied it all together to make a seamless story. And I've enjoyed it because we've become so familiar with the MCU verse,
yep,
and everything that they've done in Marvel Studios that I was a little worried that if they tried to go down that same path, they would get a lot of backlash. Because you can't get around it. The characters look different and their voices are different. It's a different vibe. But out the gate, they've established a new universe, new character set, and it's really hooked me. It's really done well. And I hope to see, I'm probably only about 20% through the story at this point, and I have a lot of characters to unlock and a lot more to see, but I'm hopeful that it's only going to continue to grow and make the universe bigger. And every Marvel Avengers story, given the different IPs and the different mediums that it's told, whether it's an animated series, a movie, a comic book, a video game, varies slightly.
Yep.
And so they need to put their own unique spin on it. And I think so far that Crystal Dynamics has done that.
I totally agree. One of the problems we've had with a lot of the recent superhero games and really in the Marvel universe is that they get a little light on the story.
Yeah.
You know, they get a little generic on the story, thinking to Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 that we recently played. That storyline couldn't have been any more vanilla.
Yeah.
You know, especially with how close it was to the Endgame stuff and Thanos. You know, there was just nothing there to really care about. But I do think that the story here is a little bit stronger than what we've seen. And they gave you enough to really care about what you're doing, whether it's the introduction of some characters like Kamala Khan, who a lot of people aren't as familiar with, or, you know, just the whole Inhuman storyline and kind of what's going on with them. The whole thing, I feel like, has actually made me care about progressing. It's made me care about what's going on. And that is something that I've really just frankly been missing out of Marvel games as of late.
Yeah.
Even Spider-Man was kind of generic. You know, it was way more about the gameplay, I felt, than the overall story that was going on in the recent PS4 game. But here, you know, it's got some heart, you know, with that plight of the Inhumans.
Yeah.
And really the struggles of all the Avengers as they're going through.
Oh, yeah.
And I know we're not necessarily trying to go too deep into some of the things so that way we don't spoil it since the game is so new. But essentially, you know, the Avengers are really at kind of a bad spot in their history. They're maybe separated a little bit from what we've typically seen, and it's a come together story essentially. So just seeing that level of adversity in these characters, I think, has been a big plus.
Yeah, I think so. And another big plus is it's not an origin story.
True.
Which has been really nice, because I feel like for too long with comic book IPs, like everyone just feels the need to give us an origin stories of some kind, whether it's 1,000 Spider-Man reboots, even the latest Batman is supposed to be a year two story. We've seen these characters year after year.
Yep.
The origins of them are kind of ingrained. We know them. We don't need that anymore. We don't need to know that Captain America was a skinny little kid that got bullied, but always stood up for himself and then became the super soldier.
Right.
We know that about him. So I'm happy to see an established Avengers team well into their years of avenging and, you know, and being superheroes. A little shout out to Age of Ultron there. You know, I support your avenging, probably my least favorite line in that whole movie, but I won't tangent. So what I'm saying, it's nice to see established characters and then a new norm and a new story.
Yeah, and then really going into beyond that, you know, I think that that story creates a great base layer for this game, but it is even better when you get into what is actually going on in the game with the mechanics, with the combat, with the menus. And so I really think that there's some good discussion to be had there because everything across the board in this game is much deeper than I was expecting.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's those skill trees we mentioned earlier and the ability to really customize your loadouts, there's, you know, lots of challenges, lots of missions, various mission types and styles and even lengths that we've seen, you know, some very short, some very long, tons of enemy types, kind of diverse enemy types that are out there. And so it is really a lot to do in this Avengers game.
Oh, absolutely. Well, before we move away from the story, I wanted to see if you felt the same way as I did. Did you start to get, like, the boys vibe from the story?
What do you mean?
Well, where the heroes are heroes and the world knows them and builds, like, comic books and kind of markets them.
Yeah, maybe a little bit just because of how big they had gotten, you know, the events of the opening where they've got this giant celebration and everybody's there, you know, really excited about the Avengers. I could see that.
Yeah.
The younger generation. You get that from Kamala a little bit, too, because she's essentially like a teenager, super fan of the Avengers, knows all the facts, knows everything about them, and then kind of gets intertwined with what's going on. So I could see that a little bit. I didn't think about the crossover to the boys, but it is good timing since they released the new season on the same day that this game came out yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I just had that vibe for it because it's not something I've ever really seen in a Marvel comic book or anything like that, where the heroes are also celebrities.
Yeah.
At the same time where they're doing these like fan events and having them write fan fiction. So that's where I got the boys vibe, where like they're real people, superheroes, but then they also have like a marketing side and they let fans write fan fiction and write comic books for them.
The Hulk's just got a screaming IG account.
Yeah.
Millions of followers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's the vibe I'm taking. It's obviously not as mature content as the boys, Amazon show is, but that same vibe where there are heroes and celebrities at the same time. I really liked it. I thought it was something different. And I could go on and rave about the story. I really like when they pull different pieces of the Marvel universe together. Like, they're making it an Inhuman story, but they haven't introduced Black Bolt yet.
Yeah.
So how's that gonna play out? Like, they're taking a new twist on the Inhumans. And I just like it. I just like it. I'm interested to see where it goes from here on out, and then where it can go with DLC and expanding the universe.
Right. Well, and with how much saturation we have in the world of superheroes, whether it's the movies, the TV shows, the comics, the games, you know, everything that's going on is we are force-fed almost, you know, these stories, the origins, the cool aspects of these characters that any of us that, you know, really in more than just the surface level, more than just the movies, like you said, we're very familiar with. So seeing them actually, you know, whether it was they had to work out a deal with Marvel to kind of go in their own direction or just being bold enough to take a step like that with them is a breath of fresh air.
Oh, yeah.
Because that has been just one of the big knocks on video games for these characters and these IPs is that they've been so safe.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that this was necessarily like a dangerous, risky play. It's not that dramatic, but just those little bits of difference really give you enough to be more interested and let it stand alone.
Yeah.
That's kind of the other thing. It's not like a companion game to a movie that's coming out or a comic that they're releasing. This feels like something that pays ton of, you know, homage to these characters that are established, but will be able to potentially stand alone in the scheme of things down the line as one kind of like story arc here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Following what I would consider the Injustice model.
Yes.
Where it's the established characters. We know their, you know, their history. We know their origins. We know their personalities. But you're giving us a totally different universe and different overall story.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, and another big thing when it comes to story is these DLC characters. And each one that comes in should expand the story out even further. And you know, we've already heard the announcement of Clint Barton and Kate Bishop and how them getting introduced into the game is going to advance the story. They're going to get their own story missions.
Yeah.
Which should expand everything that the universe is doing. And I think that could be super cool.
Yeah, we'll have to see exactly how deep they go with that, because you never know. Sometimes with DLC, you could get some really long form adds to the campaign and the story, or you could end up with kind of these like short one shots that don't really add that much value or differentiate from what happens. So I think that's probably the question that'll have to be answered. But I know when they did announce that, that was kind of a interesting point as far as what could come down for the longevity of this game if they do add in true chunks of story, new abilities, new challenges every time they release those new characters.
Oh, yeah, and new locations, because the other two confirmed DLC characters have been Spider-Man, who will be a PS4 exclusive,
right,
and Black Panther, who also recently got announced. And so it would be really cool to take a trip to Wakanda and see some new locations and new environments and
yeah,
new enemy types. I imagine if we go to Wakanda, we're going to see new enemy types.
Well, that's the best part about games like this. You know, if you think about similar style games like Destiny, where they are really playing the long game, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to have a long development cycle, they should be continuously adding in new characters, new content, new locations, new missions. And in the world of Marvel, the inspiration and opportunities there are damn near endless because there's so much source material already. So if this game really goes the distance and lasts a year or 2 years before they move on, then we really could be in for a great ride of going to not only just like Wakanda, but a number of the iconic Marvel locations. And hopefully, in my mind, we get to see a number of the iconic Marvel villains.
Oh, yeah. I mean, villains make the superhero. So it's seeing a few come in, and it would be nice to expand the roster. And with every expansion of the roster, expands that villain list. And I know where we're going here. We want to see the Fantastic Four because you want to see Doctor Doom.
I don't know if I want to see the Fantastic Four, but I just want to see Doctor Doom. And really, getting in and playing the game, you know, seeing how good the combat is, seeing how, you know, epic some of the fights have been already early on, where we're just doing, you know, campaign missions and kind of side missions and things like that. I mean, I could really see an epic form of missions and battles with somebody like a Doctor Doom or a Thanos or Galactus. You know, if you think about how other games that work kind of in this MMO style, you know, a lot of matchmaking, you know, you're looting, you're building up your characters. They tend to bring in super big bads that you really have to team up with the best of your friends and their best characters to take down. And, you know, some of those Marvel villains are just perfect for really high difficulty instances, whether it's a raid or, you know, some sort of big long form mission. I would be here for it. And I think I would play this game all the way through if they continue to dump in things like that over the course of its life.
Yeah, I think like Ultron comes to mind.
Ultron, yeah.
Yeah, they've established the aim bots, and you could just take that one step further, give me like a mega super bad Ultron.
Yep.
And then his little minions, if that's the direction they want to take it, or just one big Ultron 5 that's
right,
ridiculous and can't be stopped. I'd be all right with that too.
Well, and another thing that we see a lot in games these days are seasons.
Yeah.
Where you have a short period of time, they're kind of like special events or they're themed. You know, we're seeing the Marvel themed season go on in Fortnite right now, where there's, you know, Galactus is coming in, Silver Surfer, Wolverine all being introduced into the character list in that game. So one thing I was thinking about with Avengers is that if they were to do seasons kind of in that form or events, they really could bring in anybody, you know, hit us with these new threats, couple new missions, whatever it may be. And it's just like, okay, you know, Dr. Doom, I know we keep going to him, he's just easy. But, you know, Dr. Doom's coming in from Latveria and he's attacking New York or whatever it may be. And so everybody's got to pull together and defeat him in that season.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the next season, it's another big threat or whatever it may be. But it just feels like what they've built here, plus all of that source material, is just a perfect setup for something like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you could do the big ones, and you could also do, like, mini-bosses. You could bring in guys like Ulysses Claw or Reaper or any number of kind of, like, B-list villains that, you know, act as a mini-boss before you get to the big bad.
Right.
Before you get to MODOK, you have to go through Reaper.
Yeah.
Or someone, Lady Viper, someone like Madam Viper, excuse me. You know, that would be really cool and beef it up, but also not, like, going full tilt.
It's so funny because so much of this game, and even our conversation here, I always come back to Marvel Ultimate Alliance. They are very distinctly different games, but in a lot of ways, they're the same from those standpoints, or they could be kind of the same. Like in Marvel Ultimate Alliance, you do get those crazy numbers of B-list villains that support the A-list villains, and you fight through them. And so here, it's almost like, instead of that high-level 30,000-foot view top-down that you get in Ultimate Alliance, it's really like we're in that game, but, you know, you're right up against the characters, like you are the character. It's a lot more personal. It's third person, but it's almost like being in a first person fight with these guys versus what we got in Ultimate Alliance. But the point is that if they took some of those same aspects with those huge rosters and really introducing damn near every character and villain that's out there, I think that it would really work here, just because they're going to need that content to continuously give you that pool to keep playing and keep, you know, avenging with all of your friends.
Yeah, and keep going to it. Well, one thing, I guess you don't want to see them go too far, because this is probably where Ultimate Alliance fails a little bit, is everyone starts to get watered down.
True. Yeah.
You know, and characters start to feel the same, but so far with what they've given us in the limited hero set, and then there are some villains there. Abomination is in the game. Like I said, MODOK is on his way. And I'm sure there'll be a few others that appear here and there.
Yeah.
If you don't water it down, if like you don't want to go in that direction and you don't want to water it down, keep doing what you're doing and give us highly detailed, up close and personal connections with these characters. Great graphics, great looks. Everyone feels unique. And then keep the roster small, because I think in the end, I'd be okay with that.
Well, I think from the player standpoint, right, the roster of who we play as should stay smaller like that. I think I would agree with you there, because one of the highlights here for me is how unique everybody really does feel compared to in Ultimate Alliance, where Colossus and the Hulk and, you know, similar character types are pretty much just reskins of the same character, even though they are listed in the game as completely separate characters. I do think that I would want to see that blow up, though, more on the bad guy side. Like, that's really where I'm more focused on, is that, you know, if they could bring in kind of that endless introduction of the different baddies, I think that is what would be a plus, just from the standpoint of keeping it interesting.
Okay.
They wouldn't have to worry about flooding the game and with heroes. Keep those down to the smaller list of a dozen or whatever we're going to have at the end of the day. But I want to fight new Marvel baddies regularly.
I would agree. I'm okay with that approach. You feel free to water down the villains, but don't water down my heroes. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And you really touch on it there, because the villains, like the highlight of this game, there's a lot of good stuff going on here, and I'm sure we'll touch on some of the other things. But the true highlight is how authentic the characters feel. They nailed combat so well in this game. You know, it is fluid, it is true to form for what you would expect out of these characters. There are team-up moves and a lot of destruction as you're going through. I mean, I couldn't rave more about the combat here. What are your thoughts?
No, I'm right on par with you. Like, the combat is where it's at. That's what's going to get you coming back to every single playthrough is like when you're maining the Hulk or Iron Man or Black Widow, or in the beta and the opening sequence, we got teased of Captain America and Thor. Each person feels very unique, and it's not just, oh, well, one can fly and the other one can't, so it adds a whole extra. No, it is the Hulk feels like a totally different bruiser than Kamala Khan, who is also a ground fighter, you know. So it's two ground people. Black Widow, throw her in there as well. These are all three characters that you fight with on the ground, punching and kicking and various other combos, but yet each one feels very unique. And sometimes it's the combos between the light attacks and the heavy attacks, and then sometimes it's the extra features, the L1s and the R1s, that activate special maneuvers. Everyone has a unique feel.
Yeah, the special maneuvers. I also think just the movement, right? Like, there's a very big difference between running around and using kind of the giant jumps of the Hulk and climbing up obstacles versus using Kamala Khan, who is like live as you are hitting buttons, you know, stretching her body out to give you super jumps, or stretching her arms out to grab that ledge that's way up there, you know. And then you've got, just since you used it, Black Widow, where she has the grappling hook. So in one sense, you would think, okay, this is similar to Kamala Khan. But it's not, because of Black Widow being a human, she's got a little bit less reach.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to be closer to things in order to use her grappling hook, versus Kamala, you can be pretty far away and she'll stretch that arm all the way out and grab that ledge. So
yeah,
the little things are really kind of working there. The big things are definitely working there. And I think kind of the big cherry on top is that I have not disliked any character so far.
Oh no.
I feel like no matter who I've had to play, whether I'm choosing my character or I'm forced to the character, I am totally, you know, into it. I am totally committed. I want to build that character up. I want to level them up, get them new gear. And I'm totally enjoying playing no matter who I have to play as.
100%. It's to the point where I know when you and I jumped on the other night, we were talking about who is going to be our main here, because every time a new character has unlocked, that's become, oh, this person's definitely going to be my main. You start the game out, you get a tease of all of the main Avengers in the beginning of the game. But then once you get into the core of it, you start out as Kamala Khan, then you can move to the Hulk, then you move to Iron Man, then you move to Black Widow. Like I said, we haven't unlocked Thor and Captain America yet. But each time I've gotten a new one, it's like, oh man, no, Hulk's my new main.
Yep.
And then you get Iron Man. Oh, no. That flight and those plasma, you know, the blasters and the rockets. No, Iron Man's my new main. And then you get Black Widow and you're like, oh, okay, well, the grappling hook and the ground and pound and the sticks.
Mm-hmm.
She's now my new main. So that versatility, and I think that's really going to come into play a lot with the multiplayer moving forward, where if you get put into matchmaking and somebody else is a character that you like, it won't be like, oh, I have to be Mr. Fantastic.
Right.
Oh, okay. Like, oh, I'm stuck being the Thing or something like that. I know I'm ripping on Fantastic Four a little bit there, but you're never going to get stuck with a character that you don't enjoy, is really the point.
Yeah, it does seem that way. I will say up front, I was a little worried because, you know, with the combat, no matter who I was, I felt like it was a little button mashy at times. So there was a part of me through some of the first levels that I was like, you know, there is some similarities as far as how you fight, because you can pretty much run in and just pound square and triangle if you want to and beat everybody's ass and be fine. But that has shifted as I've gotten, you know, a little bit more of the abilities unlocked for certain characters, but really gotten more into some of the more difficult levels. Like now that I'm powered up a little bit, I'm about 50% through the campaign. And so I'm hitting that second, you know, set of missions where the baddies that have been introduced are just stronger and more capable. The levels across the board have been raised as far as their strength. And so now it's definitely forced me to slow down a little bit, be a little bit more tactical, use the L1, R1, you know, and the superhero abilities a little bit more strategically. And so I feel like that's kind of backed off. But early on, that was one of my few knocks, was I was like, it kind of doesn't matter who I am. I'm just walking around beating everybody's ass really easily. But now where we're at, I feel like that is ironing out. And I don't think it's going to be that way moving forward as the content just gets harder and harder.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I know the last major mission I did, I was Iron Man. And I came across this exact situation where I had been playing as Kamala Khan a decent amount, and then the Hawk a little bit in the story as well. And those characters, when you see a group of people, you can kind of run right in. They're, like I said, they're ground pounders. They're punching and kicking. Well, I kind of did the same thing with Iron Man and immediately got checked.
Yeah.
Because you can't do that with Iron Man. So I had to change tactics and really go to the flight and do rounds and kind of do circles.
Mm-hmm.
And basically go one-on-one with certain characters, beat them, then loop back around, break up the group, isolate another person, then kill them.
Yeah.
As you would have to do as Iron Man, like, he wouldn't be able to just walk in center stage to five or six people and be able to just blast his way through. You need to be a little more tactful.
Right.
And the shields, them introducing enemies with shields, and certain enemies come with weather weapons, whether it's fire or ice or elemental damage, and those need to be approached the right way, because if it's an ice weapon, it will freeze you in place.
Yep.
So, like you said, as the game develops and gets harder and the enemies increase and get harder, it really does force you to learn the character and approach the situation adequately.
Yeah, you brought up Iron Man, so I do have to kind of comment there, because I've been, if there's anybody I've been maining so far, it's been Iron Man. He is my strongest character at the moment. But that's exactly how I play. You know, if we come into a battle and there's, you know, 15 or 20 enemies on the ground, some of them are isolated, some of them are grouped. So I find myself immediately pulling up in flight, rocket, taking out some turrets, you know, some of those things that can hit you from a distance.
Yeah.
And then I fly in, drop the bombs, land, pound some ass, you know, boom, 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 with the fisticuffs, and then right back into the air. Now that my rockets are charged back up, I'm dropping rockets again. And so that's exactly how he seems to be playing best, as if you kind of move in and out with him, because it's just so fluid.
Yeah.
They did nothing that hinders you from being able to do everything I just described in one fluid sequence. Whether, you know, there's no downtime to whether you can fly or not. You can fly 100% of the time, anytime, you know, and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
It goes back to what we were saying about you feeling like you're these characters. There's minimal video game limitations that you get in sometimes with these, where they'll be like, oh, you know, you're Iron Man, but you can only fly for 12 seconds at a time.
Yeah, yeah. They struck a nice balance there with the rockets and the lasers and the plasma blasts, because you have a meter that determines those, and you build that meter by doing physical punches and kicks attacks, and then you burn that meter by using the rockets and the plasma blasts. But it doesn't decrease very quickly, and it increases like within one or two basic enemies.
Oh yeah.
So like, yeah, if you come in and you rocket, and you take out all the turrets, and then take out two regular Joe Schmoes with the attacks, you'll have earned your rockets back very quickly.
Right.
So it does strike that balance. And another part of all this, visually, it looks great. So that whole fluidity of you coming in, rocket, punch, flying up in the air and dropping bombs. We were playing multiplayer last night, and I actually had a moment where I stopped fighting, and I just kind of like watched Chris with the camera fly around as Iron Man and take out all these enemies. Of course, Kamala Khan's just in the corner fangirling out because I was Kamala at the time. But that's it looked great. As fluid as it sounds and feels, it also looks that good.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good segue. I know we've been spending so much time talking about the combat here and the characters, but the game just straight up performs well. You know, technically, I've had very little, you know, frame rate lag or issues as far as display. When you are out there, no matter how many heroes are on your team and enemies you're fighting, it is, you know, maintaining that high resolution. I've got it in 4K, so ever you got the light glistening off of Iron Man's suit at all times, and the game is just beautiful. The design of the levels is extremely detailed. There's lots of little chests and materials to find and secret places to open. So there's a lot of detail and intricacy to every mission.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what your thoughts have been there, but I really feel like they didn't spare any expense with the level design or some of those other aspects of the game just because they put so much effort into the combat and the characters.
It's true. I think of the Snowy Tundra level that we got in the beta and then we also played again when the real game came out. You have to traverse a fair amount of ground in that level, but it looks gorgeous. So while you're hopping around or flying around, depending on your character, looking for these little chests and these little materials, there's little crevices and caves that you can walk into, valleys in the ground, or you can go up high. It just looks gorgeous. The tree detail, the building detail, the city. There's a couple missions on the eastern seaboard, so you're in New York, and the backdrop looks amazing. Like you're right, they didn't spare no expense on making the game look gorgeous.
Yeah. Even the menus and everything, I mean, the whole display, the whole experience is very immersive. You feel like you're in a superhero world or a superhero version of the world. And I found very, very few complaints in those areas. I think if any kind of my knock on the display or how they've set it up, you know, the menu design and things is a little Destiny-like.
Yeah.
You know, you even have some very similar mechanics as far as how the inventory goes and hovering over it with kind of like the mouse icon that they do in console games sometimes. So yeah. I felt that I wouldn't go so far as to say like total ripoff. Like, you know, they all kind of inspire each other, but it was similar enough that it was messing with me, because when I was going in to delete equipment that I no longer need, because it pops up, it looks and feels exactly like Destiny. I've played 1,000 hours of Destiny, you know, in Destiny to destroy a piece of gear, it's you hold square, but in Avengers, you hold triangle.
Right.
So I actually accidentally upgraded some of my gear in Avengers by holding square early on, wasting some of my materials, whereas I meant to destroy them. So it's kind of a nitpicky thing. It's nothing really too crazy, but that was like my one knock on it, was that even though it's really well done, it's in that realm of almost like copying a successful format that Destiny did.
I don't know. I almost respect it a little bit, because we keep comparing it to Ultimate Alliance and then Anthem to some extent. One thing Anthem did wrong is they were like, we are not Destiny. How dare you say that word?
That's true.
And it almost feels like this game's like, yeah, if you want to put us in the same conversation as Destiny, thank you.
Yeah, that's true. That is a good point. That is a good point. Anthem kind of got really weird, and you read some of the stories about how they viewed that, and you could tell that it was like they were trying to do it without doing it, and here it might be a little different, but it's just really nitpicky stuff. I mean, all in all, top to bottom, I can't get enough of this game. It's the first game in a little while that has given me the full tilt urge. Like right now, even though we're recording this episode and I'm super pumped to talk about it, I'm like, I want to boot the PlayStation back up and just play more of this game.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm right there, because for me, I want to get more characters. I want to keep progressing the story and unlock Black Widow, unlock Thor, unlock Captain America. Super excited for all the DLC. So I'm right there with you. I'm jonesing to get more of this game, to unlock more of the missions, because there hasn't been a ceiling so far.
No.
We've seen plenty of missions pop up, and I think maybe I thought about this, and maybe I'll take this back later on, but so far, from what I've seen, I'm satisfied with what they've given me for my $60 purchase.
Yeah.
And it seems like only more is coming. So I'm not going to be upset with how much money I've spent.
Yeah, I agree. I was a little worried at first, because when we played the beta, we talked about this a little bit, and then I kind of saw it when we got into the real game. There are some missions in there that are almost laughably short.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, man, this is a little weird. And I kind of had it as a negative. But the more we've played and the more we've unlocked as far as the missions go, the less of a concern that has been, because they really gave us this nice mix, right?
Right.
I think I alluded to it earlier when we were first starting talking, but you know, you have some of these missions that are like these quick in and out strikes that you can literally do in 10 minutes probably. And I imagine maybe they'll get a little bit longer as the difficulty goes up, or if we raise the difficulty, they could be a slightly bit longer. But then you have these other missions that were long form 30 to 45 minute missions, where, you know, there's a lot of stuff to search out, there's chests everywhere, different types of enemies that you can optionally attack. And so there's this nice balance of mission types there. So I agree that I think that really just what we've seen so far, it's got the value for the money. But I really do expect, in order to maintain that belief from my end with a game like this, we would need them to continue to put in new mission types, put in new versions of those missions,
yeah,
and keep us full of content to keep us hooked in.
I would agree. And there's a fair balance right now of like capture the flag style, or go and defeat this big boss. But you're right, like the balance of timing has been really nice, and hopefully they'll continue the trend. I think the other piece of that is it makes multiplayer really nice.
Yeah.
So like when we were playing last night, we're like, all right, well, we got one mission left in us. And once we get to know the missions a little better, we made the mistake last night of being like, all right, we have one mission left, and it ended up being a 40-minute mission.
Yeah.
Which is probably not what we expected to do. But once we get to know the missions a little better and the mission types a little better on those late night sessions with your buddies, when you're like, okay, I've got one or two left, you can really balance that out and be like, all right, well, do you want to do a 30-minute or do you just want to do two quick fives?
Yep.
And then call it a night? And I think that balance will be premier when it comes to the multiplayer aspect.
Yeah, that'll be a benefit. And we'll have to see. Probably the one part of the game so far that we haven't gotten into too much has been the multiplayer side. There is a whole, I guess, game mode that they call, what is it, Avengers Assemble or Avengers Initiative?
Avengers Initiative, yeah.
And that is really the full tilt multiplayer area where you're partying up, you're changing difficulties, you're changing, you know, mission modifiers and the whole nine yards. We are still in the campaign, and so we did get to party up last night and play some of the campaign missions and really and check that out. We did run into a couple little hiccups, you know.
Yeah, one or two glitches. I think we had to restart a mission once.
Yeah, we were in one of the harm training missions, and we had some enemies that just like weren't spawning, so we couldn't move forward and had to pretty much just back out. Probably the kind of the biggest technical issue I've seen with the game so far.
But we didn't lose our loot or our progression, which was nice.
No, it wasn't the end of the world and should be something that they could probably fix with a patch. But all in all, you know, it's still provided a nice opportunity. I'm definitely looking forward more to doing more multiplayer so we can really see what the full suite is of options and mission modifiers that we'll be able to play with. Whereas, you know, still in the campaign, we found this last night, there were certain missions that we couldn't play together because they are really truly single player, whereas others we were able to. Really, I think all of it, well done experience with a ton of future potential. And I expect that we're going to be playing this game for a long while.
Oh, me too. I stated back in when we previewed this game back in January that the one big hook was the aspects of multiplayer are what's going to make or break this game. Like as much as I like the story, the multiplayer is what is going to make or break this game. And so far, it's been pretty amazing, you know, battling it out with your buddy right by your side. Last night I was Kamala Khan, I was beating up on a robot, and then I get one hit, punch him up into the air, and then a rocket comes out of nowhere and completely destroys them. And you would think, hey, somebody just took my kill, but in the aspect of the Avengers and knowing Chris was Iron Man and shot that rocket, I was like, hell yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, because I would go into it, like I would be dealing with somebody on the side, and as soon as I would pop up into the air, my first thing would always be to scan where our other teammates are. And so typically I would look at you, pop a couple rockets your way to help, and then I would go back to fighting somebody else. So it did create a pretty cool couple of moments there.
Oh yeah, and we were recording as much as we could last night, our session, so hopefully we can get a video out there of our gameplay, and you can see Chris going full tilt Iron Man as I ground pound as Kamala Khan. It was cool. I mean, those are always the best parts of games like this for me. The team combos are fun, and I'll say that the team combos are always cool when they're preset. You hit triangle and circle at the same time and you do a team finisher, but it's always the inadvertent team combos that I like the most.
Yeah,
like I said, I do a big uppercut, shoot somebody into the air, and then a shield or a rocket or the Hulk comes flying in.
Yep.
And finishes off the enemy, and it gives you that true Avengers feel. Like that's what it's going to feel like to be a part of this team and work together to take down a group.
Yeah, it cracks me up. The computer, when he's Hulk, will literally hurl things nonstop, right? So he can pick up these giant chunks of rock or debris and throw them. That's how he uses his projectile. And it cracks me up because anytime I'm playing on my team and I've got computer Hulk, there's just debris flying all over the place nonstop. Like, he's constantly throwing giant chunks of rock everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of the same thing. I'll be fighting somebody and then just get smashed with this giant boulder. Or the enemy will get smashed out of the sky with his giant boulder. And it's made me laugh a bunch of times. It's really created a lot of entertaining moments. And it's very different from a shooter. you know, in Destiny, because you're playing with other folks and you're in that co-op mode, you do get some of those same moments where you work together, whether on purpose or inadvertently, and you create this cool moment of combo that kind of takes out an enemy. But with a shooter, it's so much more straightforward, and it tends to be kind of the same types of things that happen. Whereas here, you're so much more into the action. You're fighting hand to hand. You're down on the level. You're right next to your teammates. And so it just kind of gives a different vibe.
Oh, yeah.
And some different, almost like more intense moments just from that standpoint.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Because in the end, a rocket, a grenade, you know, an RPG and a shooter, in the end, the explosion is the explosion. It's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
But here, the hand to hand or the grappling hook or the Hulk throwing a rock or a rocket launcher out of Iron Man, they all look so different for each character that it creates this true feel of like, okay, I'm not just fighting alongside anybody. I'm fighting alongside Iron Man.
Well, the takedowns, I think, are the big thing that also help it, because in the game, if you stun an enemy, it'll give you an opportunity to do a takedown, and each characters are unique. So there were a few moments last night where you were beating on somebody and then they would go stunned, and then I felt like I would go in and take them down or vice versa.
Yeah.
And you get this nice animation of this big attack. And so it all flows very well. It just feels like it's all one normal, you know, movement. There's no clunkiness to it. There's no glitching of the visuals. Like, it literally just looks like you essentially pass the bad guy from one dude to another as you attack and you keep on moving through.
I would imagine as we move forward and get into bigger, badder enemies and more enemies on the screen, that those moments are going to become more key, because if we're being flooded, you know, with 50 plus aimbots, I come in, punch, and you come in with the final blow. That gives me the opportunity to turn around real quick and start fighting the other guy.
True.
Because I know that enemy is dealt with and I know my teammate has it. And like, a lot of this is just multiplayer, you know, aspects where you play together and you work together, but it goes up a notch when it's the Avengers.
I know. I really think it does. Well, before we move on here, though, I did want to see exactly who is your favorite character so far. I know we don't have the full roster, but with the beta, we've kind of touched on everybody. Really, who are you digging the most?
I've gotten the most time with Kamala Khan.
Okay.
So I should probably say she's my favorite character. It's totally out of left field. I did not expect her to be my favorite character. But I think once I unlock them, it's probably going to be Captain America.
Sure.
I think my devotion to Captain America is just too strong. Or Hawkeye. When Hawkeye debuts, that could also be a big one, because I really like Hawkeye. And the comic book adaptation of Hawkeye, Jeremy Renner isn't bad, but it wasn't my favorite. So I'd really like to see what they do with Hawkeye when bringing him in. But for the moment, Kamala Khan.
Yeah, I could see that, especially seeing how Black Widow plays. I imagine that Hawkeye will be similar, but maybe have a little bit more range with that bow or different types of arrows that he can attack with. So I think that would be very interesting to see.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have a fan favorite? I know you've been maining Iron Man, but has he been your favorite?
Yeah, I mean, Iron Man definitely took the stage, and I kind of bounced back and forth. Kamala Khan was the same way, where I was not expecting to care about her at all or like her at all, and I was really surprised. I really enjoyed playing with her, but I think out of everybody I've played with so far, Black Widow has been my favorite from the combat standpoint. But hot off the presses, right before we jumped on earlier today, I may have unlocked Thor. So, you know,
it's nice.
I haven't gotten to start working on him yet, but I think that is probably going to take over fairly shortly. We'll have to see. I find that I'm going to be circling, you know, all the characters. I think everybody's really, to fully play this game out, you know, you're going to have to go through and spend some good time with all the characters and build them up and do all their challenges and the whole nine yards. So it's going to be hard to stick to a main.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And the Thor, I've gotten a hint of Thor in basically the opening cinematic. And I just, from the one little thing that's going to hook me, throwing Mjolnir, punching a bunch of dudes, then calling Mjolnir back and having Mjolnir hit people on its way back to you, and then seamlessly going into swinging it is amazing. And that will be the one thing that'll keep me coming back to Thor.
For sure.
One last thing. If you were worried about the stylistic choices of how Captain America looked because he didn't look like Chris Evans, or how Hulk looked because it didn't look like Mark Ruffalo, Thor being Chris Hemsworth, put all of that aside, because the skins definitely take it next level and will improve that experience for you. There's a lot of criticism on Captain America's armor in the trailers and even in the demos and all the footage they kept showing off. But the skins that you get to put on these characters will totally change your mind on that. And you get them right away.
Yeah.
So you won't have to look at that bad skin that you don't like for long.
Oh, yeah. And there's like 20 skins at least for every character.
Yeah. So there's plenty of depth there. And if that's your one hang up on why you're not getting this game, because he doesn't look like Chris Evans, I'm pretty confident that a Chris Evans skin will come out eventually. And you'll get that. You'll get that. Because they've said all the skins are going to be inspired by the full Marvel history.
Well, whether you're a big fan of the Avengers or just looking for a fun new action game to play, Kyle and I couldn't recommend this one more. Assemble your friends, get lost in the immersive experience, take down some of Marvel's baddest villains, and let us know on social media what your thoughts are about Crystal Dynamics' new title.
Recently, we've been polling the Geek Ketchup community in various versus matchups. Two competing characters, sometimes from the same universe and sometimes not, to see who our followers support. Our latest versus matchup pinned the Allfather himself, Odin, against one of the greatest wizards of our age, Albus Dumbledore. While we thought this would be a little more competitive, it ended in a landslide victory. With nearly 70% of the votes from Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram combined, the King of Asgard took the win. Many voters outright saying that this was absolutely no contest. Odin's pure power would be too much for anyone to overcome, even if that person is a master wizarding duelist. Make sure to keep an eye on Geek Ketchup social media for more versus matchups. We love to hear from you.
Gamers everywhere were originally introduced to Tony Hawk's Pro Skater in 1999 when it was released on the PlayStation 1, Nintendo 64, Game Boy Color, and Sega Dreamcast. Developed by Neversoft, published by Activision, and endorsed by the biggest skateboarder in the world at the time, its well-designed 3D environments, strong gameplay mechanics, skateboarding experience, and difficult challenges caught the attention of gamers across the world. Pro Skater received critical acclaim and was a massive commercial success as a top 10 selling game for the PS1 and N64 consoles. In fact, it did so well that a sequel was released just 1 year later on the PlayStation and was ported to numerous other consoles by 2001. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 took everything that Neversoft got right with the first game and expanded. That meant more maps, skaters, modes, tricks, flips, and challenges. And all of it paid off again. Pro Skater 2 received arguably better critical acclaim than its predecessor and sold more than 5.3 million copies, according to Wikipedia. It was a game that helped define the new generation of console gaming and has been revered by many as one of the best games of all time, including Game Informer, who once ranked it number 4 in its top 100 games of all time list in 2001. Unfortunately, though, the franchise shifted from an IP powerhouse to a memeable disappointment over the 19 years since, as developers of subsequent installments struggled to capture the same magic of the originals. Today, we're going to be talking about the newest addition to the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater saga, which comes to us in the form of a remastered version of Pro Skater 1 and 2, which just released by Activision on PS4 and Xbox One on September 4th. This is not the first time the original two games have been remastered, but it is a release that already seems to be giving a shot of rejuvenation to a franchise that's been on life support for the last 10 years.
Yeah, Tony Hawk Pro Skater is one of those games from our history that is ingrained in my brain. It's one of those friends' basement games that I'll never forget when we were growing up. Like, you go over to your buddy's house, and you're hanging out in their bedroom, and you're passing the controller back and forth, taking runs on the various levels. The warehouse, obviously, is iconic, and all of this and that. And those memories are so strong. I'm happy to see that this remastering is really bringing the franchise back to where it belongs, because they did have some missteps. And I know Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5 was like a total misfire. People, you know, ran it into the ground, said it was awful.
Yep.
So I'm happy to see that this game can really bring it back to life and bring all those people of our age that really played it and love played it back to gaming and give you those nostalgia feels.
It's true. We spent a lot of time playing the original games on PS1, whether it was, as you mentioned, us passing the controller, trying to take different shots to see if somebody could get over one of the challenges or collect, you know, the secret tape on a really hard move that you had to do. They also had the multiplayer, which had some really great modes in there with horse and the spray paint, you know, trying to go around and tag different colors and end up with more of the level tag than your buddies. We had a friend, our friend Sean, who was insanely good at this game. Yeah. By far and away better than anybody else in the group, getting 100,000 point tricks and just stuff that nobody else could compete with. But unfortunately, you know, after Tony Hawk 2, it really kind of died for us, you know, between competing games and the lack of quality in, you know, Tony Hawk 3, 4, 5, and some of the offshoots. It really got away and fell from grace.
Yeah.
But I was super pumped to see them remaster 1 and 2 onto the modern consoles. And it was, I said it was a rejuvenation for the franchise. It was a rejuvenation for me as a fan of that franchise, because it had been ported a couple times over some of the previous console generations. And really, it was out of my mind.
Oh, yeah.
Buying Tony Hawk Pro Skater games was not even an option for me, really, over the last, you know, 10 years. And then they announced this full remaster. I'd almost say it's kind of like a remake, just because they did a full overhaul of the graphics. They brought it to 4K, increased frame rates, brought in a lot more challenges and a little bit more capabilities with what you're doing in the game. And they combined both maps of 1 and 2 essentially into one game.
Okay.
So whereas you see in a lot of other remasters, you know, you're going to go in, you're going to choose version 1, you're going to play through that, then you're going to go choose version 2, play through that, and they're separate. Whereas here, they really morphed it all into one game. So you have your created character, you have the challenges you're working on, the progression you're doing, and you can choose whether you want to play in levels from Pro Skater 1, or if you want to play in levels from Pro Skater 2, and it's really made it a more consumable experience as a remaster from that standpoint, because you won't have to start over.
Yeah.
But I cannot rave enough about this game. It came out yesterday, and I spent a ton of time playing it, pretty much from 8 a.m. down to about 5 or 6 p.m. in the afternoon. It tells me I'm about 50% through the map, so I got a good chunk of time to really get some first impressions on it, and I could not be happier.
It's going to happen for me. I have not purchased it. I figured with Avengers coming out on the same day, I wanted that to be my focus. I also bought Ghost of Tsushima, and unfortunately, that isn't probably going to get finished because of Avengers. And if I knew that if I threw Tony Hawk in the mix, it was just going to be game overload. But from what you've said, I think it's definitely in my future, especially being the $40 price point.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Like, they're not charging you the full $60 for a remaster. They're saying, yep, we got it. It's a remaster. It's a game you've already played. We'll make it a $40 price point, which makes it even better me. So, like, it's going to happen. Everything you've said, it's so cool, so smooth. The nostalgia factor. I, too, have these memories of our friend Sean grinding, like, for, like, 60 minutes straight. Like, he goes into this just a spin and forgot what level it is exactly, but he worked out a little pathway where you could just go into a grind and not break it and just keep doing quite like little switches to giving little point boosts and getting 100,000 plus tricks. So hearing all of that and that the game checks those boxes, I'm definitely going to be scooping it one day.
Yeah, I really have not seen much that I didn't like so far. You know, as I mentioned, the graphics are a complete overhaul. It brought it into the modern era. It looks gorgeous in 4K. And what I think is really the bigger boost is the frame rates coming up, because now you get to see all of the craziness that you do on that skateboard in like crystal clear, clean motion. You know, I liken it to old school TVs, you know, when you would watch sports and they would do something really fast, or they would throw the ball and, you know, the ball would be blurry, or it would like, you would see it come out of the quarterback's hand, but then you wouldn't really see it in the air. And then, you know, the receiver would have it.
Yeah.
That's kind of how the games of old were, just because of resolutions and frame rates and lower quality, lower capabilities. But now, you know, I feel like when you're doing those kick flips into the grind, giant move off the vert, you know, you can really see the details of your character, the board, the moves he's doing, And that really brings the experience up a lot. There's a good bit of customization with the creative characters there. I don't know if it feels like they overhauled that so much. You know, it's hard to say without going back. It's been a long while since I've played the originals, so I can't 100% back this, but the sense that I got was that as far as like the faces and, you know, the tattoos or maybe some of that stuff, it felt like they kind of stuck with what assets were there originally and just cleaned them up.
Okay.
Because, you know, some of those points were a little bit less varied or less diverse.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the skateboards or the t-shirts, the jeans, the apparel that you can put on, those things feel like they got way more attention because, I mean, there's probably at least 100 skateboard designs in the game.
Wow. Yeah.
And then beyond that, you know, because the originals always had a good number of boards, but I feel like it's probably larger, but there's a whole set of boards that have animated decks on them.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I know you don't play Call of Duty, but for anybody out there that's listening that plays, you know, the modern Call of Duties, you think about your calling cards. In Call of Duty, they started making these animated calling cards where instead of just a picture of a guy with a gun, maybe he's like shooting the gun. And you can kind of see that, you know, the bullets flying out. Like, that's what's going on with the decks now.
Oh, that's cool.
You might have an animal or something on that deck, and he's, like, twitching. And he's, like, just moving, you know? And it's
yeah.
It's just a whole nother level of bringing it into the modern age that, you know, even though it's kind of a silly detail, the bottom of the board, it really was exciting to see.
Oh, yeah. You come up on that vert ramp. And you see the bottom of the board, and to see like a little animation, yeah, that's just a little added bonus to the thing. Do you think with the created character that they went back to the original? I guess maybe I misunderstood. They went back to the original created character, or did they pull in maybe the one area of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5 that worked in that creative character?
I don't know if I could say. I just felt like the choices for the actual build, right, as far as like body type, face feature, you know, hairstyles, some of those things just felt a little bit less or a little bit more limited than what we see in a lot of modern games.
Okay.
And I didn't play Tony Hawk 5, so I'm not sure exactly what was there. But, you know, comparing the body features versus like the swag, you know, the apparel and the boards and everything,
mm-hmm.
It just felt a little lopsided. So that was my thought was, okay, maybe they just stuck with what was original between maybe 1 and 2, that those assets in the game.
Yeah.
And then they put some time into expanding on some of the others, like the boards or whatever it may be. So it ultimately ended up not being too big of a deal. You know, you're not really spending a whole lot of time looking at the face of your skater. It usually is more about the clothing as they're riding the board and the board itself.
Yeah.
So it gave me enough there to build something I was happy with. But I was immediately excited to go and start unlocking, you know, the other stuff just to make him a little bit better.
Boy, it's funny you reference, you don't look a lot at their face. It's more about their apparel. That's the whole reason I used to play Chad Muska back in the day, because he wore the backpack.
Yeah, he had the backpack.
And it was like the one unique part of that skater. You know, Bob Burnquist looks the way he looks with the hat. He's got the flat bill hat, and Tony Hawk's obviously Tony Hawk. But I was like, no, I like Chad Muska because he wore a backpack and it was unique for the rider. So that's cool. It's awesome to hear that the updated graphics have really improved and the mechanics are still there from the original. One question I did have is, did the soundtrack make it?
Yeah, the whole original soundtracks are there. And that was a big deal when they first announced it, because I know they said that originally they had all but like a couple of songs and people were a little bummed out. I think they got most of that taken care of. So yeah, it's got these really classic punk and rock kind of hits from the late 90s, early 2000s time frame. I think they did add in some more modern stuff, because there are some songs in there that I've heard that I was like, there's no way that this song, like a little bit, some more like EDM or rap stuff in more of the modern styling that I don't believe existed back in 99. So it's been this good fusion. Like when you're navigating through and, you know, looking at the menus, working on your unlocks and looking at challenges, whatever it may be, the music is on point. And I found myself being like, I haven't heard that song in forever, or, you know, just jamming out as I'm skating through the school, doing some wall rides, whatever it may be. So that's a big plus. It's hitting a lot of the nostalgia buttons.
That's sweet. That's sweet. And the big one, of course, is Goldfinger Superman. You got to tell me that that's like the song. Like when you hear that song, you're like, that's some Tony Hawk Pro Skater. It's the one that, you know, it's like, so here I am doing everything I can. Yeah, that song.
I do think it's in there. I'd have to go back and check. There's been a lot of music in it. So, I mean, to pick one out specifically, I think would be a little bit tough. But I haven't really noticed any that I was like, man, I really haven't heard this song. But I'd have to go back and look at the list to confirm that for you.
Okay. I'm telling you, it's got to be in there. I feel like there'd be a Tony Hawk Pro Skater fan riot if that song didn't make it into the soundtrack. Because for me, there's two songs that I like totally associate with Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And one is that one. And the other one, oddly, is Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash.
Because it was in there?
Because it was in, but it was actually in Tony Hawk Pro Skater Underground
2. Okay.
And that was the last major Tony Hawk that I played.
Yeah, Underground. I don't think Ring of Fire I've heard for sure. That's a little bit more unique. I think I would have definitely remembered if I had heard that one. But I'll tell you, I played like 6 hours yesterday, probably total, and was loving every bit of it. You know, the first 20, 30 minutes I took to have things come back to me as far as the gameplay goes and the timing. But I was able to 100% the warehouse, you know, that iconic opening level from Pro Skater 1. Got every challenge done, seeker tape, the whole nine yards. And so after that 30 minutes of kind of reacclimating back to the style, to, you know, the moves and things like that, you know, I felt like I was pretty confident moving forward. It was so funny, though, because we played so much of these levels back when we were young, and then having gone, you know, damn near 20 years without picking up these games at all.
Yeah.
As soon as I got into the warehouse, I knew exactly what to do. Come down the ramp, jump off over top of the half pipe through the glass, get the secret tape.
Through the glass.
Boom, over, yep. And start getting the skate letters. Like, it was just, I didn't even have to think about those things, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, well, we played that demo like 1,000 mm-hmm. times. So, you know, we very recently had an off-mic conversation about demo discs and the nostalgia of PlayStation demo discs. And nothing tops that list, like, other than Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and The Warehouse. That is the demo.
Yeah, the PlayStation demo. But, you know, I felt like one thing that kind of got me early on and still gets me a little bit, if there was anything I could really knock as far as the gameplay goes, is, you know, these were very D-pad heavy games back in the day. You know, the PlayStation 1, as you recently reminded me, did not have analog sticks on the original controller. And so when a lot of these games came out, you were all D-pad. And when you do the moves, because of that, you know, they're set up kind of like a fighting game. You've got right B. Well, I'm playing on Xbox, so if you're on PlayStation, it'd be circle. But, you know, it's like up triangle, down up B, down right X. You know, those are your different moves. And so it's more fitted to working well with a D-pad.
Yeah.
But in the modern version, in this new one, I found that just skating around as you're navigating the map, it's way easier to do that with the stick. Like, for whatever reason, I felt like when I used the D-pad to traverse the map on the board, that it was clunky and I was struggling. I was, like, running into everything, but I went stick and I was, you know, nice and smooth moving around. So I've had to kind of change how I would play the game a little bit because I'm going back and forth. Like, naturally, my thumb kept sticking to that D-pad.
Yeah.
But now, after playing a couple hours of it, I find that, unlike many other games where D-pad is involved, I'm bouncing back and forth. When I'm setting up a trick or I'm coming out of a trick, I'm all stick, so that way I can line up my angles and everything right.
Sure.
But then as soon as I'm going into that trick, as soon as I ollie to go into something, I'm moving right down to the D-pad to hit my different tricks. So that was the toughest part I had getting back into the swing of things. And I think it was just that difference between what's locked in my brain versus what we can do on the more modern consoles and more modern controllers.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And I was actually going to ask when you started this, I'm like, is that where you ended up, where you're maneuvering with the stick, and then when you got to go to do tricks, you're moving to the D-pad?
Yep.
And if my memory serves me correct, we found a lot in the older games to just kind of use your momentum and not move left or right as much. And just kind of letting, when you come down off of a trick, whatever direction you're headed, that's where you just allow yourself to go. because if you try to move left or right with the D-pad, you're going to throw yourself into a wall or trip over something, get knocked off your board.
Yeah.
So it's good to hear that they've updated all of that so you can make that smooth transition from stick to D-pad.
Well, and you think about any game when it comes to skateboarding, or even kind of those high-speed sports-type games, you know, the camera is a little tricky at times because, you know, you've got so many different angles and you're jumping off of ramps and stuff of various heights. So the camera is constantly shifting on you, even though you have some control over it. So I find that's really what you end up having to do is kind of go up, hit your trick, and go for what you can. But then you got to let the game do its thing so that way the camera can reset. You can see what's coming next. Another big boost that the game gets is with that 4K and that modern graphics is that you can see the environments much clearer than you could in some of the old grainy, you know, PlayStation 1 styling.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot easier to see that table that's in front of you or the gap that's coming up that you need to jump and whatnot. And like you can get through that. It wasn't like it was a game breaker back in the day, but just now that everything is crisper, clearer, you know, it's a lot easier to kind of follow your path or be like going up for a rail grind and then seeing the ramp over to the side to be like, okay, I can come off of this and go hit that. I just feel like it's all a little bit easier with the modern look to it.
That's cool. That's cool. I mean, who knows? Maybe this could be the resurgence of skateboarding games.
Yeah.
You know, people have been wanting a Skate 4 or a Skate 5. I forgot exactly where the Skate franchise is on their numbering, but people have been jonesing for the return of skateboarding games, and Skate was different. It was more authentic, and Tony Hawk ended up being on the arcadey side, but could this bring back the potential of skateboarding games?
I would really hope so. I think a skate game, a new one, just recently came out, but, you know, they've never been my cup of tea, per se. I was kind of always, you know, Tony Hawk 1 or 2 or nothing else, and maybe that's why I'm so into this now that it's back. But I do really hope that this becomes a rejuvenation for the franchise, you know. We've always watched the Tony Hawk series over the years and wanted to buy a game.
Yeah.
But just now that it's been, you know, multiple versions with really lackluster reviews, really poor sales, it really kind of just put it on the back burner of like, that's not a franchise I even mess with anymore.
Yeah.
And now playing this, you know, and really seeing the excitement, because I know a number of people that pre-ordered this game, whether they're big gamers or not, whether they're into sports games or not. I mean, when people saw this coming out, they jumped all over it. And I even had some buddies yesterday who were texting that were like, what? They released a new Tony Hawk they didn't know. And they literally just went and bought it immediately and downloaded it and were playing it.
Yeah.
Because it's that important to a lot of people, especially of our age or from that era of gaming.
Oh, yeah.
And so I really just hope that Activision can see the success here, because I really assume it's going to have very, very good sales numbers. And hopefully then they can take that, build up a team, give them the support, give them the money, go make Tony Hawk 6 and make it legit.
Yeah,
just
do it right.
Forget the Middle Ages of the history. And just do it right, bring it back to prominence, because clearly people like skateboarding games.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole, like you said, there's a whole generation of people that grew up on skateboarding games, or, you know, I'm thinking late 90s, mid 90s to mid 2000s was like the dawn of the skateboarding era, like in mainstream culture. Obviously, skateboarding had been around since the 50s.
Yeah.
And for a really long time, but it really hit mainstream pop culture. So there's a whole wide range of people that grew up watching the X Games, watching Tony Hawk, have that memory of the famous 900 ingrained in their brain.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're in their 30s and 40s, and they've got that extra cash to play video games. You could definitely see a successful franchise come back.
Yeah, as long as they give it the time and the support, you know. And I don't know enough. I haven't spent enough time reading and researching what, you know, was the true downfall of the last couple of games. But a lot of times when games fail, it's because they got, you know, a bare bones crew, or they had a limited budget, limited time. Those types of things all come into it. And it felt like Tony Hawk had just become this kind of throwaway IP that they were going to put out every now and then. And maybe it would do good, maybe it wouldn't. And I feel like if they were to, use this momentum and really kind of the style of the game too, right? Because, you know, you got this nice creative character build. You've got the, you know, I don't even know, probably 10 or 15 maps from each game. So, you know, 20 or 30 total levels, lots of challenges inside each of those levels. You've got a full online multiplayer mode, which I haven't even gotten into yet, but me and some of my buddies are super pumped about that, you know, getting off the couch co-op and now being able to play those classic Tony Hawk multiplayer games online, leaderboards, you know, the whole nine yards there.
Not have to deal with split screen.
Right, no split screen, no screen watching. But on top of that, they pack the game full of content to unlock. I think that there's over 700 challenges to do in the game.
Oh my God.
Whether it's performing so many kickflips or heel flips or grinds, you know, like buying stuff, hitting gold medals, like everything that you can think of involved with the game has these different challenges to work on and get all these different unlockables. So there's a huge amount of content here, even though these games are so old. And it's like a formula just feels really good. And if, I mean, if they came out and said, here, here's Tony Hawk 6 with a bunch of new levels, but this same base format, I think I would buy it now playing this.
Yeah.
But, you know, beforehand, wouldn't even have been a thought.
Yeah. Well, now that you mention it, Tony Hawk Pro Skater is a perfect game for achievement hunters.
Yeah.
Like, it, the game was almost originally built around achievement hunting, and now that it's, like, a thing, you could definitely see them. So as soon as you said 700, I was like, whoa! But then hearing, oh, it's X amount of kickflips, it's X amount of grabs, it's this or that, I'm like, oh, that's just achievement hunting 101. Well done.
Yeah, and there was a good variety in there. Those are kind of the first things that come to mind. There was definitely some more specific stuff. And of course, each level has a variety of difficulty in the challenges you get in them. So one of the last things I'd probably say is I was kind of happy with it because I was able to go through and unlock so many levels from both games so quickly. But the only one that I 100%ed so far was the original warehouse. So, you know, when I got going at first, I was like, oh, yeah, I was like, this is easy, you know, and I was kind of kicking its ass. But then I started hitting those spots where it was much harder to get to where the secret tape is or, you know, the locations of things, because you only get 2 minutes in each level.
Yeah, I was going to say the skate letters are spread out and you only have 2 minutes. Okay.
Yeah, and some things are a little bit more obscure. So not all of the details of where locations were came back to me. And what I ended up finding myself doing was chasing the, on each level, there are a certain amount of character progression points that you can find and get. So instead of having to wait for a level to unlock a stat boost, you know, you can go and you got to get them out of the levels. So what I started doing was as soon as I would unlock the next levels, I was bouncing through them, A, to try them out and see them, you know, for our review here a little bit. But B, I was chasing down those stat points so that way I can continue to make my character better, my skater better. And then my goal is then to circle back and go after the high score challenges or, you know, some of those items where maybe you got to do that long rail grind to get to an area. You know, it'd be much harder when my guy is terrible versus when I've got that fully stacked rail grind stat, which I'm one away from already.
Oh,
because that's the first. I love the rail grind. That's how I do my points. I'm always into like manual straight to rail grind. So that was the first thing I've been maxing out is my grind skill.
Nice, nice. That's sweet. I can't remember where my main was, but I mean, rail grinding was always so cool.
Oh yeah,
and like I said, and it becomes a total arcade glitch out where you do it. Like I said, our buddy Sean, who would sit there and rail grind for 60 minutes plus. So it's always been one of the better aspects of the game.
It's true. And I was getting a little frustrated at first because like I wasn't scoring a lot of points and, you know, everything was just kind of short and, you know, oh, here's 2,500 points or whatever. But once I got that groove down of coming off of a jump, maybe doing a heel flip kind of move, you know, landing onto a grind, doing a kick flip, landing back onto the grind, jumping off the rail, going into that manual where you keep the trick going because you land and you're in like two wheels, you keep it going, you're balancing it, hit the next rail and keep it going. I started hitting 20, 30, 50,000 point moves and really elevated the game. That gave me that boost and I was like, okay, I'm ready to go. And then I just started running through it.
Like, it's back. I'm ready to do this.
Yeah. Still have a long ways to go to really dial it all in, but I was super happy with it. And just like Avengers, as much as it's kind of got, I've got this competing thing now because I really want to play a lot of Avengers, but I'm like, man, I could go sit down and do another 4 or 5 hours of Tony Hawk right now.
That's sweet. Well, good thing we did get that early access to Avengers, gave you the time to do a couple days on Avengers and then focus on release day Tony Hawk. It's going to be hard for me to avoid it, but my game list is already backing up on me.
It's true. If I would have gotten both fresh yesterday, then I would have really been conflicted as far as like, which do I focus on and which do I play? But the 3 days early access for Avengers was critical because it allowed me to come back and spend most of my time yesterday checking out Tony Hawk.
Well, if someone told you Tony Hawk Pro Skater was one of their Desert Island video games, there wouldn't be much of an argument. Along with the X Games, the game ushered skateboarding into the mainstream, paving the way for it to be added as an Olympic sport.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this chapter, be sure to hit the subscribe button to get new chapters of Geek Ketchup every 2 weeks on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Be sure to follow the show on social media, and you can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Geek Ketchup Podcast, or on Twitter and Instagram at Geek Ketchup Pod. Links to all these accounts are in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. Stay saucy, you nerds.